Blog Talk Radio.
Providing the best quality products that your animals deserve and at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Pat Foreman. I'm your co-host today. Andy Schneider will be calling in shortly, I do believe. And I'm the author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, Backyard Poultry, Backyard Market Gardening, Day Range Poultry, and a few other sustainable agricultural books. I'm an avid local foods supporter. Today is Wednesday, October 5th, 2011, and we would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio talk show that is broadcast around the world. Yes, we have an international audience. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, gardening, urban farming, market gardening, emergency preparedness, and living a self-sufficient, healthy lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. And from there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, even sign up for a monthly e-newsletter, the Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. Now, if you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, we invite you to join us in the chicken chat room that is going on right now. Right now, folks are gathering to talk about chickens and other things that are on their minds. You can talk with other backyard poultry lovers, with the Chicken Whisperer fans, and other chicken owners literally from around the world. You can also, in the chat room, ask any questions that you might have for our special guests when we have them. And our special guest today is Arlena Schott from Garden Wise Living. Arlena from Garden Wise Living. Arlena is truly a rebel gardener, and she always brings a sparkle to the show. Now, to join the live chat room is so easy. You can do it. I know you can. Just log on to Blog Talk Radio, click Register, and get your own creative and fun screen name and start clucking along with the other chat room chickeners right away, and it is truly that easy. We also invite you to mark this show as a favorite and to request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. Please take a moment to do this today, and again, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try ManaPro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Looking for something? Find it online at BidBird Auctions. BidBird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made BidBird Auctions their new home. And get sold on BidBird. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensie has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensie.com. Brensie spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensie.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensie. Technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, folks. Thanks for tuning in today to the Chicken Whisperer, Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles. Looks like Andy hasn't called in yet. I know he's Caleb's sitting. He's out of town at a hotel, and who knows what technical problems can come up. So we'll just go ahead and proceed ahead. As far as the chicken chat or coopside chat, as we call it when we first get started, it's always fun. I'm so thrilled that Arlena is coming on the show today because last week she talked about winter squash. And I was at the farmer's market this morning, and I'll be darned, I just had to get one of those spaghetti squashes and some acorn squash, and I knew how to pick out the acorn squash because she told me, look for the ones with the stems on and look for the little reddish kind of bottoms where the blossom was. And so I'm looking forward this afternoon. I'm going to put those in my solar oven and just see how spaghetti squash does in a solar oven. And I've even got a recipe for it. How about that? Okay, well, chat room chickeneers, let me just check in to see what's going on here in the chat room. It's filling up. We've got, oh my gosh, we've got Alex Mossman, Allison Patrick, Bardrock. Hey, Bardrock, glad you're here. Big Kenny, Grover, where would we be without Grover? Bunch of guests, Jesse Phillips, KCT Shida. Great name. Love for poultry. Ah, Christine, I'm so glad you're here, too. Ralph, Sarah Luders, Sunny Riley, Tally Calvert. Boy, it's just packing up there. Okay. So Grover there at the Dragonfly Farm says he took some birds to the auction Monday night and really took a beating on the geese and the ducks, but the ruse brought top dollar. Well, isn't that interesting? You're going to start processing now your ruse. Go to rooster camp. Grover, what did you get for your roosters? I'm curious about that because I've got quite a few the roosters come along. Of course, my hens all hatch out, the little babies. I told my little broody hens, anyone that wants to go broody and wants to work on hatching out, they're more than welcome to. So I had about, seems like it's when have you noticed, when one person gets pregnant in a community, it seems like then all the young gals tend to follow suit. It was kind of that way with my hens. It seems like they all of a sudden wanted to go broody. So I had probably about eight setting hens throughout the summer. And, I, of course, I'm working on the book, The Way of the Hen, Incubating Eggs and Hatching Chicks Naturally. So they're my teachers, and I'm learning from them. And, my gosh, I've just got so much respect for them. But let's see. Grover, how much do you get for your ruse? There we go. $10 a piece for the roosters. That's pretty good. $4 for the ducks. That's all. That is a beating. And $8 for the Emdens. Wow. And Sarah says they've got 10-week-old Polish. A 10-week-old Polish that lost a leg? Dang. So you got a peg leg chicken there, Sarah? Is it able to get around okay? I do have known chickens to be able to get around. Yeah, she's hopping around on her one good leg and doing a fairly decent job. Not sure if we should put her down. That is always such a question. And I've taken in chickens that sort of needed a little hospital care, some special TLC, and darn, you get attached to them, and then but you know they're in pain or suffering. So that's a tough call. Only you can make that call or ask her and see what she wants. Apparently the leg's totally gone, so she just has a stump. I had a dog back in my childhood named Buttons, and that dog was part border collie and would not stop chasing cars. It just it would get hit, get well, go back, chase car, get hit, get well, go back, chase car. And it ended up being hit that it had to have one of its legs taken off, so it was a tripod. And do you think that slowed that dog down? Not a bit. It's still... not too smart, but it still kept chasing those dogs until finally it got hit so badly that we had to put it down. It was a mercy case at that point. So I don't know. I do know chickens that have gotten around quite well with one leg. I know of a case where they're using a chicken with a, I think it just has a little bit of a bum leg, but they're taking it into nursing homes and rehab centers and working with kids, and that chicken has become a star, and it's like people can empathize with it, saying, oh, you know, chickens get bad eggs as well. Oh, gosh. So anyway, Love for Poultry has posted let me just pull this up. Thanks, you, Christine. Has just posted a notice here. World Poultry, Healthy Flock. Let me see what this interesting article is. It's loading up here. I've got a couple of chickens in the news that ought to be pretty good. Grover says at Dragonfly Farms, they raise enough chicks that they can fill everyone's freezers. Everyone's freezers. Wow, that's a lot, Grover. And we really want to be chemical-free, knowing what is in commercial feed. It's safe to raise our own meat birds. Well, you know, it's 25, 50, even 100 broilers, especially where they can get out, but you know, still get the sunlight and the sun. And by the time you do that, if you figure if you only do 50 broilers, that'd be two batches of 25, and you can do that in an 8 by 12 pen, but that you move so they have fresh graze. But you figure that you've got one. With 25 birds, you've got chicken dinner every other week, or with 50 birds, you've got about one every week, and it's just not that big a deal. Christine, that article isn't opening. Let me see what I did to get back to that. It looks like it's pretty good. Give it a little boost here again. Okay. Well, while that's opening up, let's see. Oh, Grover, he puts it in everyone's... Grover, you're such a sweetie. He says he puts it in everyone's freezer because he's related to the entire town. Oh, my gosh, Christmas must be a lot of fun there, Grover. You must have a lot of Christmas presents. And, Sarah, thank you for letting me know that I'm cutting in and out. Can others give me a sound check? I'm having trouble with my phone. Sound check, if you would, please. Am I cutting in and out? I will, or just let me know if that's okay. We'll see. And that article's still not, there's about a 20-second delay, so that article's still not booting up. Okay, well, I'm going to go over some events that are coming up. There's all kinds of things happening in the chicken world, and one of them is World Chicken Day, World Food Day that includes chickens, of course. This is October 16th. It's a global thing. Thank you, Glover, for the feedback. It's not now. I put my phone down. I'm getting some better equipment here very shortly, so hopefully I'll come across a lot more steady. So across the globe, this is for real. Everyone can celebrate it. Many different events are being organized to raise awareness of the problems in the food supply, and not only in the food supply, but also in the distribution of food. So what they're doing is they're having the distribution of food and in the cultivation of food plants as well. I mean, we've talked many times on the show about how vegetables are not equal, that the vegetables, if you're going to do a kitchen garden, you might want to get the heirloom seeds that were developed before 1945, before World War II, because those seeds were, those plants were selected from generally living soils that was just the cusp of when, after World War II, when we started to go to chemical agriculture and really putting the plant enhancement products on the soil and on the plants. So there's, I'm working on an article that has a lot of information about how the antioxidants are much higher in some of those heirloom seeds. So, and of course, the same thing can be said, and we'll go into that later, about some of the meats. So anyway, World Food Day, October 16th, they're doing projects aimed to help farmers be more productive and improve both local communities' access to food supply, which I think is so important, as well as farmers' cash income. So if you can just get your local community's food access increased to fresh vegetables and clean meats, that will also help the growers' cash flow. And, of course, there's a multiplier effect when you support your local community, and it kind of goes around, and that money stays in the community a lot longer, and that helps everyone out. So there's a whole modeling system about how to keep local funds local. And what's interesting, too, is I was down at the farmers market today. I heard two or three conversations that were talking about bartering services for chickens, or bartering for eggs or squash. So it's starting to kind of take off in our little community here, too, about everything does not have to be translated into cash, which I think is a good thing. So they're also doing, for the October 16th World Food Day, put it on your calendar, they're also doing fundraising events to include sponsored sports, charity actions, concerts, and even marches. So get those marching bands from the high school out, get the bagpipes going to help support World Food Day. Okay, there was also one we talked about yesterday, and I'm kind of announcing this one as a generic one because it is in a specific locality. It's in San Luis Obispo in California, but there's a garden-based learning teacher workshop. And what they're doing out there, and I think this is great to go across the country, they're talking about curriculum connections to school gardens. Curriculum connections to school gardens. This is that how to integrate your lesson plan and the lessons about life, as well as biochemistry, as well as soil science or about food science, nutrition, actually be able to merge that in with the school gardens. And I know up in Vermont, which is a wonderful role model in Montpelier, the Vermont Compost Company gives compost to the schools for school projects, and those school projects, they have flats, they grow lettuce, and they use that then in the school cafeteria, and they monitor and collect all the biomass residuals, the whatever isn't eaten of the foods, and then they take it back to the compost company. So that presents a very real and valuable lesson in how to complete the cycle in food. Okay, so that's October 8th, if anyone's in California, San Luis Obispo, garden-based learning teacher workshops, curriculum connections to school gardens. And I've got to put a plug in here about my California workshop and book signing tour that's coming up. It'll be from mid-November to mid-December. It's about a month long. I'll be there over Thanksgiving, and they've already kindly offered to keep me for Thanksgiving, which is great. But it's sponsored by the Santa Barbara Permaculture Guild. The Santa Barbara Permaculture Guild. And if you're interested there in California, it'll also be extended if there's interest to New Mexico and Arizona. Just contact, send an email or a request to the sbpermaculture.org. Santa Barbara, it's just sbpermaculture.org, and they can start to get you on the list to plan it out. So I'm so looking forward to that. I mean, of course, I love to talk about chickens, but I also, it's the permaculture, as most of you know, I've studied permaculture now for about 30 years, and I'm always learning from it, and it's just, permaculture is a short acronym for permanent agriculture, which also means, of course, local agriculture. Okay, Bardrock just had a really interesting chickens in the news here. Let's see, dog owners told to keep chicken killers from running loose. Very good. Chicken killers from running loose. This is from the telegram.com, and it's written by Debbie LaPlaca, LaPlaca, Debbie LaPlaca, and she's a correspondent from Charlton, Charlton. And last night, the selectmen, looks like select men, I guess they don't have select women, but anyway, selectmen, that's probably the same as the town council, ordered the owners of dogs that twice killed chickens to fortify the containment fencing and make sure those dogs do not escape again. It says, if your dog came on my property twice, it wouldn't be coming back home. I can assure you, and we need to make a decision that's in the best interest of you and your neighbors. And that was selectman Peter Boria said to the dog owner. Animal control officer Anne Schnell told the selectman that two Alaskan Malamutes, they're big dogs too, two Alaskan Malamutes killed chickens, and one dog escaped and killed three and then maimed a fourth. It says, my hurt chicken is under vet care. Has to have a leg amputated. Gosh, that's two stories today about chickens with one leg. Bless its little heart. So I'd have his leg amputated, and her birds are rescue birds that she considers pets. So there you have it. She says the owners of the chickens say they really don't wish any harm to the dogs, but ask the board to make sure the chicken killings do not happen again, and I would add ever. Neighbors and friends testified on behalf of the dogs and the dogs' owners dedicated to containing the dogs and the dogs' friendly nature. And I do know some Malamutes, they can be really friendly dogs. So, of course, we've talked about this before. I think and truly believe that dogs that go through chickens, I think they can be rehabbed. I think they can be sent through BA, quite frankly, Birds Anonymous, the 12-step dog program that can tell them and teach dogs that chickens are not play toys, that they're not things to go after, they're not to be really rowdy around them. And I don't see why any dog should really have to be put down unless I think it would be very rare if the owner would be willing to commit to get the dog trained to behave properly around flocks. I mean, the same way they have to behave, hopefully, around children. And, of course, I'm a big believer of training children, too, to behave themselves around dogs. Okay, so Bardock, thanks for sending that in. That's a good one. We've heard it time and time and time again, these horrible, horrible stories that don't have to happen about neighbors' dogs get into the chickens, and then the chickens end up getting killed, and then the one neighbor with the chickens shoots the dog, and then there's a lawsuit and all kinds of bad loss of goodwill. So it's something we have to deal with as a culture, because, as you know, chickens and family flocks are exploding quite literally exploding across the country. In the last 2 years alone, more than 500 towns and cities have changed their laws to allow, and in some cases even encourage, family flocks, because they can bring so much to a community, not only in local food supply, but also in emergency preparedness. I was just talking with someone at the farmer's market this morning. They were saying how their local farmer, had something like 50 chickens, and a fox wiped them all out. So they went to the farm to get their eggs, and there weren't any eggs because there weren't any chickens. And we started talking about food lines and saying, well, you know, if you had your family flock, even if the supply lines were totally devastated, you would still be getting eggs. And if worse came to worse, you could always have a chicken dinner. And if it came to really bad, some of that organic feeds would probably make some pretty good muesli and taste pretty good if you had to eat some of the chicken feed, and which brought up a challenge. I said I was going to take some of my organic feed that I get. It's in a sort of all ground up together, and I'm just going to cook it and kind of see what it tastes like. Add a little maple syrup and some butter. I bet it's not too bad. It might be a little crunchy, but gosh, if you're hungry. You can't get anything else, it might be pretty good. Okay. Let's see. Let's just check up here with what's going on with the chat room. It says, okay, Grover has 27 eggs in the incubator right now. And that's, let me say a little bit about having chicks hatch out this time of year. If you get a fall crop like this, the disadvantage is you've got to keep them warm, at least for the first 3 weeks or until they feather out before they can go outside. Then there's a little bit of more challenge getting them acclimated to the outdoors. But the advantage is come 6 months from now, you'll start getting eggs. So let's see, October, November, December, January, February, March. So early spring, those little chicks will be at point of lay, and you can start getting a jump start on the egg laying. So that's the advantage to that. Let me just check up here too. The other thing I'd like to say about chickens is that about the eggs. This is a little spiel I do in some of the workshops. Grover says he has facilities to keep them warm. Wonderful. Here's the deal with eggs. This time of year, because the days are shorter, the number of eggs that the chickens lay decreases. I mean, when you think about it, nature is very wise. I mean, Mother Nature is our teacher of us all. The winter is kind of a bummer of a time to be born if you're a chick. You got to admit it. I mean, it's a little extra work for the hen. I mean, the food supply in the natural environment is kind of getting more scarce. So nature has it that the hens don't lay as much. As many eggs in the winter. But here's something to keep in mind, and this is pretty important, and I've been doing it too, and that is, and how long is an egg fresh? And I heard this at the farmer's market. I had a great time at the farmer's market this morning. One lady was asking, well, when were these eggs laid? I want to make sure I have fresh eggs. Were they laid this week? And I sort of chortled a little bit. Well, here's the industry guidelines on fresh eggs, and then I'm going to tell you just a little bit about chicken and eggology. The guidelines for the lay egg producers is that they have 1 month after an egg is laid, 1 month to get that egg to the grocery store. 1 month. The grocery store has 1 month to sell the eggs. So that's they're already 2 months old and they're considered fresh. And by the way, most of the grocery stores, they will keep them in pallets in the back. They don't really put them in refrigeration So I've seen that, but I just wanted to throw that in. They get to refrigeration when they get to the cabinets outside in the main store. So anyway, we've got 2 months. Eggs are still considered fresh. The USDA says you've got, after you buy the eggs that can be 2 months old, you've got at least 5 weeks to use them. So they still consider eggs up to 3+ months as being edible and fresh, which is quite a bit. So 3 months. So when you consider that an egg to be fresh 1 week old, that's almost nothing. And here's the other interesting thing about keeping eggs is that as long as that natural bloom is on the egg when it's laid, as long as that's there, the egg is clean and the shell is not cracked at all. The shell is not compromised or showing any cracks for bacteria to get in. As long as that egg is in that state, it won't go bad. It won't rot or do whatever. What happens is it just dehydrates. It just kind of shrivels up. And that's why as the egg gets older, it gets more oxygen, that little air sac gets bigger. And that's why when you drop an egg in water, it floats because that air sac pulls it right up. It's a little buoy almost. And that's how you can tell an older egg, whereas fresh eggs will just drop right to the bottom. And I know we've covered this before, but this time of year, one strategy that I use is I started stockpiling my eggs about a month ago. And the hens are decreasing their numbers, so I've had to cut a couple of customers off. So I'm stockpiling them, keeping at least enough. So come November, December, January, when the eggs are pretty scarce, I'll still be eating some of the eggs from my flock because I've just got them in the freezer there. And I know that I inspect them very carefully. I know none of them are cracked, and I have not washed them, so they're clean. They're clean from just collecting them and keeping the nest boxes clean, and I know they will be quite fine. The oldest egg I've eaten, I did this experiment earlier, just keeping them, and I kind of ran out of eggs, but the oldest egg that I've actually eaten was 8 months old. 8 months old, and it wasn't, you know, I wouldn't want to cook a flan with it or a souffle, but it was edible, and it was fine, especially given it was almost three-quarters of a year old, so... So that's a strategy for you to consider about your family flocks and your egg supply is start stockpiling, maybe starting in September and then just keeping those eggs through the holidays. And for those of you who are producers, of course, you start stockpiling and when the new year comes and other producers don't have eggs, you will, and they will start bringing a higher price. I get $5 a dozen for my eggs in the winter, and of course the organic feed is like twice what the commercial feed is, but $5 is and they're happy to pay it, and I run out, quite frankly. So in the summer I'm getting more eggs, so I'll drop it down to $4, but even that's going up. Okay, let me check the chat room here again. And it looks like good to know. Yeah, that is good to know. I mean, and the other thing too, of course, if you got eggs stored and something happens to the supply line, you will you'll still be having eggs. Let me just kind of a feral cat. Allison says a feral cat is probably causing problems. Allison, I would love to. I personally have never lost a chicken or a baby chick to a cat, and I'd like to know if they've actually taken some out. And Love for Poultry says no, it's a secret to take care of the cat. Oh dear, yeah. Let's see. I have had cats. Allison says this cat is hanging out by the chickens too, and just beat up her favorite cat. Oh dear, the remedy is loaded. Okay. Yeah, cats, they're kind of like people. They're always spatting at each other for the smallest of little things, aren't they? But sort of drama queens and kings. Okay. Okay, well, here's an announcement. Thank you, Sarah Luters. Let me just get back to it. It says the CDFA, UC Davis, and UCCE will be co-hosting an educational meeting in Santa Rosa on Tuesday, November the 1st at 5:30 p.m. regarding animal care. It's by Dr. B.T. Crossley from the UC Davis School of Vet Medicine. Okay, thank you for that. And food safety. Be giving a description of IBD, and in addition, she will be discussing resources available to backyard bird owners with sick birds. That's a wonderful thing. Boy, I'd like to go to that myself. Thanks for posting that, Sarah. Any other quick, brief announcements from the chat room here? And if not, we'll go to a quick commercial break and then come back with Arlena Schott of Garden Wise Living. Okay. Love for Poultry says she uses this dish detergent and water to clean their eggs. Okay, that's great, but of course, once you clean those eggs, it takes off that water-soluble natural bloom that is nature's protective layer. Okay, let's just take a quick commercial break then, and we will be right back. And we'll be right back. Thanks for the chat room chicken ears. for sharing here in the little post chat and chickens in the news. And so Arlena Schott has called in with Garden Wise Living, our very own rebel gardener. And when we come back, we will bring her on live. So stay tuned, folks, and we'll be back in a minute.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah! Okay, welcome back to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Arlena Schott is our special guest today, our rebel gardener, and always brings such a sparkle to the show. And so let's just go ahead. Wait a minute, Arlena, I'm going to give you a drum roll because you not only deserve it, it's just something fun to do.
Funny. No.
Arlena, are you there?
I am
here.
Hello, how are you?
All right. Oh, I'm rocking and rolling here. Just as they said in the chat room, I did the farmer's market, and I did have my quarter cup of coffee-colored half and half this morning.
Yay!
That's it.
Oh,
once a week. That's all. Otherwise, I just go over the top and do dumb things faster. So I don't need to
Oh, my
do that.
God.
Yeah. So how are you doing, and what's new?
I'm wonderful. Not much new here. We're having kind of a summer, Indian summer, where we've had 80 degrees starting Monday and the rest of the week is supposed to be the same, so it's kind of our Indian summer, so it gives us time to get out and get all battened down before our first snow flies, and I hate that word, but it's going to happen. It usually happens just around Halloween. We usually get kind of a little bit of a taste of it. Yeah. So
first snow date. Gosh. Yeah,
anyway,
I've got more firewood ordered. I think it's going to be a kind of a hard winter. What do you think? Do you have any ideas about that? Or I mean, the little fuzzy worms are real fuzzy and.
The fuzzy worms are huge, and they're fuzzy, and like for instance, my cranberry bush—it's a viburnum. It's they're like North American cranberry or American cranberry bush. They're really just planted for the birds. They're loaded with berries, and normally you'd see a spattering, but they're just heavy laden. I usually just leave those on because come spring, then the birds come in, and that's what they eat. So it's telling me maybe we might have, the Farmer's Almanac says it's going to be a harder winter than last year, and we did have quite a long winter and a lot of snow, so we'll have to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tally, it's snow. Run away. I know, right? it is pretty, though. Fall is here. It's here with a vengeance. The colors are turning. It's absolutely gorgeous. We're all excited about that. Getting a lot of trimming done, pruning, getting things ready to go to bed for the wintertime. But fall is here, and we still have quite a while yet before we have to turn in our shovels and wait for the snowblower to come out. So we still have quite a bit of time yet here in Wisconsin. We get a nice long fall. Yeah.
Well, that's good because you have a nice long winter.
Yeah, no, we have a nice long winter. It's time to rest up, and we have lots of things to do in the inside. So it's just,
absolutely.
You're up for it. And then in winter here in Wisconsin, you don't think 60 below or 30 below, it's cold, but you know it's cold outside because it looks cold, so you just bundle up for it. All our vanity goes right out the window. The Carhartt coats come out, the hats, the gloves, the scarves. You know, Wisconsin and Minnesota people understand there's no such thing as trying to look cute going to the grocery store in the wintertime. You just do it, you know. So, yeah.
I know. So much for shoe fetishes and fashions, right? It's just the boots and the waffle stoppers.
Right? It just doesn't work. Well, that's okay, though. That's okay. It's Wisconsin. We love it. It's beautiful here.
Well, today I thought
we would talk about getting pickled. And I know the chat room is going to have a good time with this one. I think my last show we were really staunch and I stuck to a script and everybody said, geez, Arlene, you're not as talkative. I was trying to be professional.
We were staunch. I didn't notice at all. I mean, in fact, I've got to tell you, I bought some acorn and the spaghetti squash at the farmer's market because of your talk last week.
Oh, good.
I can just hardly wait to do that, especially the spaghetti squash, in my solar oven.
That'll be awesome. I'm excited to hear about it next time. You'll have to tell me.
I'm excited to try it. But I've got rice down really good, and the lentil soup went pretty good. Anyway, I'm learning, and it takes longer, but, you know, there's no propane or anything. It's just free energy.
Right, free energy. That is fun, absolutely fun. Well, I was on NBC, WEAU TV 13, our local NBC station here last week, and I did talk about doing pumpkins and fun things, you know, with pumpkins and Cinderella pumpkins. And I did a pumpkin puree, and then I made pumpkin fudge, and absolutely wonderful.
Ooh.
Yes, at first I thought, okay, pumpkin fudge, but you use a lot of spices, you know, and you know, cinnamon and allspice and things like that. So it's really flavorful, very, very sweet, as my husband says. But, of course, it's fudge. Come on, it's going to be sweet. And I was so excited because, you know me, as a rebel gardener and as a rebel cook, I do not follow directions well. So I was very excited that my fudge actually set up. Usually I have fudge that's kind of like a gooey form. You know, you can roll into a ball in your fingers. But this was pretty cool that it was actually set up like fudge because I followed the directions. I set the timer on the stove and it said, stir. At a full rolling boil for 10 to 12 minutes, and I did it. I actually did it. I know everybody was amazed and shocked, and everybody put flags out, but it actually did set up, so I was excited to make fudge. So anyway, that's what I did. I was real excited. But it is very, very good fudge recipe. And I think I actually put it on my recipe page. I did, on my website. And it's, let's see, fudge, pumpkin fudge. It's very, very good. Very good.
Oh, man, that's a little dabble do you, though, won't it? I mean, that's just
a little dabble do you, that's right.
Oh, man, yeah. That's another thing that would get me buzzed is that hyperglycemia that comes with fudge. I love it so much, but oh, my gosh. So, yeah,
right.
It's good. Pumpkin fudge. Yeah.
Okay, so today,
yeah.
You know what I thought we would talk about? We would talk about getting pickled. Now, I know you're going to have fun with that word, those words, but pickled. Pickled as in pickled jalapenos, pickled peppers, because I have a lot of jalapenos right now and a lot of peppers. So I thought we're going to talk a little bit about pickled peppers. So my favorite recipe, and I actually did put it on my website, and it's under canning and preserving, put it up fresh with GardenWise. It's a very simple recipe. It is a very simple recipe, and it's very, very good. It's very important, though. Use a really good olive oil. That's probably the flavor. If you're going to do a pickled recipe at all with oil, make sure you don't use a vegetable oil or anything like that. You really do need that flavor of the olive oil. It does change the flavor. I'm not saying you can't. Don't get me wrong. You know me. I don't follow rules, but I'm just saying I've done both. And the best flavor comes from an olive oil rather than a vegetable oil or corn oil or anything like that. And this recipe is really good because right now we've got carrots at the farmer's market, or you've got carrots coming out of the garden, and you've got somebody keeps trying to buzz in on me. I'm gonna be mad. You have onions, sweet onions from the garden. And jalapenos, we're picking them all here. We've had several hard freezes, but I've really been lucky enough to save a lot of peppers, and they will save for a long time. Last year I picked 5 big, you know, those 10-gallon containers for trees, 5 of those big ones full of different kinds of peppers, left them in my garage, and covered them with frost cloth just to keep them cool but not freezing. And even into Christmas we were still putting peppers on the barbecue.
Wow.
So they really save a long time, and they turn green. If they're green when you pick them and they let them sit, they'll start to turn red, which really makes it pretty in the jar, or if you're making jalapeno or pepper jelly, it really makes it pretty to have some of that red involved. But anyway, I'm off on my tangent again. Peppers, we've saved a lot of them. I know. We've saved a lot of them, and actually my frost blankets, they are from DeWitt, and DeWitt frost blankets are the bomb. They work so well. We've had 2 really hard frosts. I mean, not just little ones, but killing frosts. But my frost blankets, when I put them on, they saved my pepper plant. So right now, this week, we're having this 80 degrees. It's really great to see how many more peppers I'm going to be able to get. So I picked all jalapenos, and I went to my daughter's, and I picked jalapenos, and we must have 5 5-gallon buckets of jalapenos to pickle.
Yum.
And lots of carrots and lots of onions, because that's all you'll need. Other than, this is a secret, Mexican oregano. This is a secret ingredient for any good, really good pickled pepper. It's called Mexican oregano. And bay leaf, it's just a really good flavor. And all we do with that recipe is you throw a little bit of olive oil in the pan, and then you throw in your sliced up carrots and your sliced up onions, and you let them saute just a little bit. And if you like garlic like we do, we take about 4 or 5 cloves of garlic. Don't smash them, just throw them in there. Stir it around, let them saute for just a little while. Then I throw in my jalapenos or my peppers. Each one of those peppers, though, does need to be scored at the tip of the pepper, like at the butt end, so that the vinegar and the juices get all inside, so when you bite it, it runs down your chin. That is the best part right there. So score each one of those peppers, and then throw them into all that goodness that's brewing away there, the olive oil, and it doesn't take much olive oil, and in there. I mean, I think that's, I don't know where the recipe is, not up on my page, but I don't think, it's right here. 1/3 of a cup of olive oil is all it takes. So that's really, really awesome because, you know, it doesn't take much. And then all you'll need else is a cup, let's see, 1/3 of a cup of olive oil, 1 pound of jalapenos. See, I double the recipe because my pot will hold a double recipe. 2 to 3 medium white or yellow onions, 2 to 3 medium carrots, a head of garlic, cloves separated, but I use like 5 or 6 or 8 cloves and I separate them. 4 cups of apple cider vinegar. Now, apple cider vinegar gives a different flavor than regular vinegar, and some people don't but like that different flavor, but I just love apple cider vinegar and what it does for your peppers. It's just wonderful. A little bit of salt there, 2 tablespoons, 2 bay leaves, 1/2 teaspoon of dry oregano, but you got to get the Mexican oregano. It's so wonderful. Now, you put a little bit of fresh marjoram in there, a couple of sprigs of thyme, and a tablespoon of sugar, and that's kind of your all we're going to need, really. But anyway, in our pot is our, now we've got, what do we've got going here? We've got our onions brewing away, we've got our carrots all cooking away, we've got our peppers in, and there we're stirring, and they're all nummy, 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 delicious. Now, we just want to cook those a little bit of time, not very long, and then we want to add our vinegar, and then we want to just cover it and let it blend and just bubble away for, it doesn't take long, about 10 minutes or so, and then all we need to do is bottle them. And everybody says, oh, you hot water bath? No, I don't hot water bath because I like the crunch. And to get the crunch, you need to not hot water bath your peppers because they don't need to. You've got that hot, hot brine. You've got those hot peppers. You've got all that hot goodness. You've got hot lids. You've got hot jars. Pickle and pot or can them babies up. Seal them up good. Wash the lid, obviously. Wash the top. Put your lids on. Really good rings, really good lids. Seal them up, they'll seal. Besides, nothing's going to grow in vinegar. We've already talked about this. Nothing grows in jalapenos. Oh, my gosh. So, and they're just wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I've used this recipe for jalapenos. I've used it for other kinds of peppers. It's a really good recipe, basic recipe. And then you can play with it. You can, you know, change it up, add cauliflower if you'd like. You can add oh, yeah, there's lots of things you can add to it, lots of vegetables if you want to add some things to it besides just the jalapenos and the onions and the carrots. Really good recipe. So now we're pickled up, and you can use any kind of peppers for this recipe. So now we're all pickled. We do need a glass of wine, don't we, though? Does anybody have a suggestion on the wine pairing we would pair with jalapenos? Anybody out there? Come on. I know you all like wine out there, so if you'd all like to tell me what kind of wine we'd use. You know what I like to do? I really, really like a bagel with cream cheese and sliced jalapenos on it. Yum,
ooh,
I like pickled jalapenos.
Oh.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
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 It's really, really good.
It's the food you not only taste, you feel. It's a really sensuous food. Talking
yep.
wasabi from, yeah, it's like, whoa,
yep.
That was an experience.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly. You feel it at the same time. But getting pickled is really easy. Really, really easy. I would hope everybody would try to pickle something today, maybe. Do you pickle anything besides pickles? But I like peppers, pickled peppers, lots of pickled peppers.
Yeah, there's. Can you say the Peter Piper thing?
Piper pickled. No, can't do it. Sorry, don't have enough wine.
I kind of forget it. Peter Piper pickled peppers. How many pickled peppers did Peter Piper pick? That's what it was.
Right.
I bet our chat room would be good with that. Yeah.
I think they would actually. So we still have nobody yet telling me what kind of wine, so I'm just going to have to get into my wine bottles here. Let's see.
Well,
I would think
it'd be a red wine. It would be either a red wine or a spicy wine.
Right. I've got a chocolate cherry here. Oh, I don't think that. Here's one from Door County. Oh, we're going to pop this one open. It's noon somewhere, isn't it? Okay, I've got my glass. Anybody else want to join me for a glass of wine?
Yes, I'll take one. Thank you.
Okay. There goes the bottle, the top. Okay.
It's not even a fun, freaky, frivolous, fractured Friday yet.
That's
we're,
right. Oh, no, no. Wine is
wine.
Any day. Yeah.
Oh, wine is any day.
Oh, yeah. Sarah, the wine is open, dear, and it's pouring in the glass as we speak, because we're going to talk about grapes next. So if anybody has any questions,
all right.
Grapes. Does anybody have any questions, though, about getting pickled, besides drinking a lot of wine? No pickling
Sarah in
questions.
The chat room says that this could get very interesting with the open wine bottle now.
The wine bottle
is open.
Green,
yeah. This is getting interesting. Yeah.
Well, we have to, when we talk about grapes, we have to talk about wine. Here we go.
Absolutely.
Okay, the wine is poured.
That's what you poured.
The wine is poured. This is a white wine from, it's actually from Door County, which is here in Wisconsin.
It's
and
local.
It makes a wonderful wine, and it's probably made from a Himrod grape or something like that. Himrod is a variety that is also grape, and it's native to America. So it's a really good grape that grows really, really, really well here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm not really sure about Georgia. What kind of grapes grow in the south where you all are from?
Oh, muscadine.
Muscadine
grapes grow here.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not real savvy on any southern grapes varieties. So you all have to help me there. Hey, Sonoma County.
Yeah, that's the heart of wine country there, isn't
that's
it?
That's the heart of wine country, isn't it? Yes. But, you know, Wisconsin is one of the top growing right now in grape producers that there is. Right now, Wisconsin is one of the fastest growing areas for vineyards, which is really crazy,
really?
Right? You wouldn't think. Yep, absolutely. It is. I saw the statistic.
Okay.
I saw the statistic. It's the word. It's a statistic. But anyway, we are. So it's really kind of cool how many vineyards there are popping up everywhere around here. And I think it's because of the cold. I believe that's what the winter cold and the different change in the fall weather that makes the wine so different. So that's the need and the want for Wisconsin wines. So we're really excited about that. Wisconsin St. Croix winery there, Chateau St. Croix. They actually won quite a few awards at the California, California Wine Contest. So, yeah, we're doing really good here. I'm really happy everybody is, but, you know, that's here nor there. This is really good wine.
Okay.
I'll drink to y'all. And if anybody
cheers,
else there would like to open a jar, a bottle, in my honor today, because we're talking about grapes, I'd just go right ahead, because we talked about getting pickled and wine. We're going to talk about grapes. So, you know,
I love it. You definitely are a rebel. I'll save mine. I'm having dinner over at some friend's house tonight. I will have a glass of wine in your honor.
In my
tonight,
honor?
Arlena.
Wine
yeah.
and power tools don't mix. That's what the chat
no,
is saying
oh,
right
never,
now.
Never.
No, 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 no. But, you know, we've been...
Sarah says, I don't think she's going to make it.
I am going to make it.
I think you'll do just fine.
This
yeah.
is our first first glass. It's actually noon. See? Noon? Isn't it supposed to be noon or is it 5 o'clock somewhere? Is that saying? Noon?
It's always 5 o'clock somewhere, yeah. Yeah. Tally says we need power tools that run on wine.
I think, yeah, there we go. Wonderful. Well,
and then
just like
Yellowtail
to hear,
is produced in Texas.
Right. I just would like, I think, like to hear what everybody else is growing out there. I really, really am interested in that. I know here in Wisconsin, Concord grapes, and which is really cool. I'll jump off on my tangent again here. Yesterday on the way, or the other day on the way back from Eau Claire, I noticed a little sign on the side that said Concord grapes, you know, for sale. So I zoom in there and grabbed a really nice bunch of Concord grapes. Because I myself, I know this is crazy, right? I don't have any grape plants planted. So that is really my goal for either this fall or early spring is to get my grape vines planted, because you always say, gosh, they take so long. I don't know. But, you know, years and years and
they
months.
They fly by, don't they?
Fly by. So when we moved here four years ago, if I would have put in my orchard then, if I would have put in my grape plants then, I would be already making my own wine, right?
Or grape jelly. Whatever.
And grape jelly. See, that's what I'm going to do with these Concords. I am making grape jelly because I love grape jelly. It's just one of my favorites, and I can remember with Granny always making grape jelly. It was just something that we always did. So I'm really excited that I found some Concord grapes, besides they're so delicious, that I'm going to be able to make grape jelly. But anyway, Concords is probably, for Wisconsin, one of the hardiest of all varieties. Of course, you know, Because she just is. She's just very, very hardy. It's not hybrid or anything like that. There are several hybrid varieties of Conkers that they have mixed, like La Crosse. You know, that's a really good variety. Esprit is a great variety appropriate for table use or winemaking. Esprit is a really nice grape as well for here in Wisconsin because it is very hardy. And here, obviously, we need really hardy grape varieties. It's a mild, fruity flavor, and it produces white grapes. So maybe this Door County grape, this wine. I'll have to look on the bottle. Besides, my glass is almost empty. I'll look on the bottle. It should tell us, because your labels on your wine pretty much tell you what kind of varieties of grapes your wine's made from, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I like to drink this stuff.
Yes, it should say there.
It should say.
So now what kind of grape is your wine made of again?
That's what I'm just trying to see here. I think it's an it's an Esprit. Esprit.
Okay.
Esprit. Esprit.
That's a grape variety?
That's a grape variety.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah, it's a Wisconsin grape variety. Esprit. Oh, you can eat it. It is a table variety as well, but mostly it is. This one says Esprit right here. Esprit. Hmm. Hey, that's okay. It tastes good. We're good with it.
Yeah, well, here it says, I just looked it up. It says it's a very good grape for home use.
Huh.
It can be grown in almost any part of Minnesota as well as Wisconsin there. And they like full sun. And there's all kinds of varieties of Esprit. Look at that.
Yeah, it just says Esprit. It doesn't say which one it is. But the wine's good. Here, I'll take another sip for you. Here you go.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah. It's a little dry. It makes my jaws tingle.
It's lunch.
Yeah, it's so dry.
You know.
Oh, boy. I would just check out if I had anything at all to drink during the day.
In wine?
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. Just any sort of a thing like that. Yeah. Well, cool.
You know, here in Wisconsin, Wisconsin and Minnesota, we're actually pretty lucky because we have Elmer Swenson. He's from Osceola, Wisconsin, and he's been breeding hardy grapes for over 40 years. His first two introductions was Edelweiss and Swenson Red, which you've probably heard of Edelweiss.
Mm-hmm.
They were released jointly with the University of Minnesota. Edelweiss is a large, clustered, white variety that has good quality for table grapes as well as wine. But if you want to use them for table grapes, you have to pick them early. But anyway, if not, left on the vine, they're really, really good Edelweiss grapes for wine. So, again, we're really, really lucky because we have Elmer Swenson, who has been producing and breeding grapes forever here in the state of Wisconsin and Minnesota. He's got, Edelweiss, Swenson Red, and Swenson Red is another good variety here for Wisconsin, very hardy. And again, here in Wisconsin, we really, really need to watch for our hardy varieties because obviously we have winter. But if you have, for instance, if we get a grape variety here in Wisconsin that is a little tender, we can lay it down and cover it up, so that helps. But most of your varieties that we grow, like the St. Croix, the Himrod, Concord, La Crosse, those varieties are very hardy, and those are the best grown here in Wisconsin for wine. So if you see a vineyard, most of those are. Those are the varieties that are grown here, other than Concord's not for wine.
Mm-hmm.
Himrod, La Crosse, Edelweiss Red, things like that. But anyway, that's kind of fun. Anybody who grows what? Cheese-eating surrender monkeys. What the heck, Sarah Lund? You know, it's really kind of hard to I catch just parts of the chat room, and then you just find all these coughs. Cheese-eating surrender monkeys cough. What in that? This is Wisconsin. This is Cheese Century. Again, California out there. Sorry, but, yeah, we are. So cheese and wine go really well together. I wonder what kind of cheese I have. I wonder what kind of cheese
I have
in there.
Seeing what cheese, yeah. And there's a question about maybe how to prune the grapevines. From Ron and Sarah. Yeah.
Okay. You want to if you for instance bought a property that has some older vines on them and they haven't been well kept, it's very important for the first 2 years to prune them slowly, and that would entail finding finding, talking about, I kind of not watch this chat room. Okay, finding the strongest stock that there is. For instance, you buy a property and you find some old grapevines that are on there. You want to not just rush right in and trim them all back. That's a shocker. Plus, you're not really sure how that plant has developed and the best way to get it back into shape. So you want to look for a really strong stem, and you want it cut the first year. You want to cut it back maybe a third, then the second year back the rest of the way. You don't want to just go in there with a chainsaw, there you go with your equipment, and hack away. You really want to look at her and say, okay, here's my strong stem, so I'm going to, A, use that for my main stock. Then I'm going to trim it back a third, which maybe will take back all that old growth that's been just draping around and wandering through the woods or wherever she is. She may be on the ground, which sometimes that happens. Things get out of hand, and she may have laid on the ground, and now she's running everywhere. And then you would want to stand it up with the main stock. Look where your main stock, your heaviest branch is. Stand it up as far as a support apparatus, and then trim back a third of the vines. Then the next year, trim back again. And only they, like the state of Wisconsin or Wisconsin University, recommends that, and the state of Minnesota, because it's not such a shock on the plant. Plus, you can tell then the next season just exactly how far she does need to go as far as whether she's producing or not producing. If she doesn't produce, then obviously we need to take her all the way back, fertilize, and then let her come back again. That's for an old variety. Now, or an old plant. For a brand new one, begin training after the vine reaches the first wire. So if you put it in a brand new little baby plant, okay, and, you know, you've purchased some new plants maybe from Stark Brothers, and they come in your little one-gallon container or four-inch pots, and you put those in the after, and you put up your wires. Okay, most of us put up, 12 to 18 inches to 2 feet off the ground in the first wire. When that plant starts to reach that first one, then we start training it to come up and go to our second wire and third and therefore. But when pruning a well-established plant, not an old, overgrown one or a brand baby new one, is a brand baby new one words? I think it is now. When pruning, keep in mind that the fruit is produced on the current season's growth. So that grows from last season's wood. So you don't want to drastically prune her back, but you do want to make sure a lot of that vine does come off. Now, if you prune it back way hard, heavy pruning provides the best fruit, okay? Light pruning will make more yield, but heavy pruning provides the best fruit. So if you light prune it, you'll get lard yields of smaller fruit. Heavy pruning produces larger fruit, let's put it that way. They might not be as many clusters, but they're going to be larger fruit. It's your choice. Most of the grapevines around here, I see the orchards around, or vineyards, excuse me, around here, I see heavy prune in the fall. Heavy prune way back, and I'm sure you see that in California, Georgia, everywhere you look. So most anybody in the business of producing, those are going to be heavy prune back vines. Now, here at home, as a homeowner, depending on what you want. Now, for instance, if I've planted my grapes to cover my arbors, I maybe not want to prune them back real heavy. I want to prune them back two-thirds, possibly, or something like that, rather than hard prune them back all the way to the main vine. And again, remembering that your fruit is produced on that year's wood. So, you know, depending on what you want. If you're in it for the vine, and the cover, you know, the pergola that's covered with a beautiful grapevine. Mm-hmm. We just want to keep her healthy. We may just prune her back a third. If you're in it for producing, you may hard prune her so that she builds large clusters, not as many, but larger fruit clusters, or prune her back soft, and then she'll produce a lot of clusters, but not as big. So depending on what you want, absolutely.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I've got my notes here. This is pretty good. I have two Concord grapevines. One of them is out of control, and the other one is even more out of control because some of the arbor broke down. So that's on my list to do this fall is get that arbor fixed and get them, take about, I don't know, probably a half a day and just spend time with the plant and prune it gently, like you were saying. Right. Then shock. Yeah. Literally, it's time just for a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we can finish up with grapes or prunings or peppers or any other questions
more wine?
That might come up in the chat room.
Can we have more wine?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. We're gonna have fun when we meet, you know.
I'm thinking so.
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Our special guest today is Arlena Schott from Garden Wise Living, and you can see her website at GardenWiseLiving.com. That's GardenWiseLiving.com. I'll also post this in the chat room. And her phone number, is it okay if I give your phone number out?
Yes.
Okay, I thought so. I just remembered I better double check because you can get swamped, I'm sure. Anyway, her phone number is 715-985-3963. 715-985-3963. Stay tuned, folks, and we will be right back in just a few commercials.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Since 1985, Meyer Hatchery in Polk, Ohio has been a family-owned and operated business. Meyer Hatchery is a year-round hatchery that offers over 160 breeds of poultry, including chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, guineas, peafowl, and game birds, plus a full line of feed and supplies. Just need a few baby chicks? No problem. Meyer Hatchery will ship as few as 3 baby chicks. Check them out online at MeyerHatchery.com. That's MeyerHatchery.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com. That's MTHealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at MyAmishGoods.com. That's MyAmishGoods.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All righty. Welcome back to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manipro. I see, and I just looked it up on my little computer here, Andy has quite a few different area codes, and I see there is one that I believe is his. Let me just bring it online here. Oops. Hello, area code 706. Is this Andy? No. Hello, 706. Okay, mm-hmm. Sorry. My mistake then. Okay, welcome back, folks. I was hoping that was him. It'd be good to check in with him. Our special guest today is Arlena Schott from Garden Wise Living, and we've been talking about pickling and grapes. So we're talking about pickling and grapes and wine, and we're having testimonial sips and toasts here in the chat room as well as on the air. So, Arlena, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Feels like Friday to me. I don't know about you, but somehow has that Friday feeling. And here, it's only Wednesday. See how much fun we can have midweek.
It's a midweek fun day. That's right. Absolutely.
Now, every day is a fun day. I mean,
every day is a fun day. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had another thing. I had one more thing to say about pruning. There is kind of like a breakdown of the buds and how many to leave. For instance, if you're doing table juice and jelly varieties, you can have 40 to 60 buds per vine. You leave that. Leave those.
Wow.
Yeah. But wine varieties should only have 20 to 30 buds per vine after pruning. Uh-huh. So, again,
if you're
doing table juice and jelly varieties, leave 40 to 60 buds per vine. If you're doing wine varieties, they should only have 20 to 30 buds per vine after pruning. 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 Yeah.
And why is that? Why do the wine ones need to build up the sugar content more because it's not added?
They want them to that to me, this is how I would take that as a rebel gardener, but you know, hey, how does that work? I would think that when they're saying to do that is just like exactly like you say, you want to concentrate on more versus more. Table varieties, juice varieties, you know, jelly varieties. You want more smaller ones, wouldn't matter. But in a wine grape, I would think you would want a stronger flavor or a stronger a cluster of grapes, larger and stronger. So you would leave less buds to make that. I'm thinking, I don't know. Yeah, whatever. Let's get a wine connoisseur. I know what we should do is get a bus, and we'll take a bus to all the vineyards in the United States, and we'll ask them all.
There you go. Then you got a book. Just take
okay,
good notes
who wants
and write
on the
it
bus?
Up, and she got a bus.
Who wants on the bus?
Andy would say we should take our Learjet. You know that.
What? That's not very self-sufficient. That's not very. How are we going to land in every? Are we going to land everywhere? I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think.
And one of the things I like to add about grapes, and I was wondering if this also affects either the wine or the jellies, is that it's known that if you stress the grapes in the skin, it will have a higher level of the pycnogenols, of the good anti-stress and antioxidant qualities. So to a certain extent, you want to stress those, and however you stress a a vine. Maybe he shouted it. I don't know, but is that true?
Stressing it, I would assume that would mean in climates not like ours that has rain would mean lack of water. To me, that would be stressing it.
Yeah.
So if, for instance, you're in California, in that dry country out there, you would stress it without turn your irrigation off. Yeah, absolutely, and stress it. That's how I would say they're stressed, yeah.
And I guess that's also true with apples, that you can get a richer flavor if you stress the tree at certain times, and it also then gives higher antioxidants.
Oh, I would assume it works the same way. I know that's how we get a lilac to bloom more prolifically in the spring, is to stress it in the fall. That would just make sense to me. Just makes sense to me all the way around.
Yeah.
So you are so smart. You are smart.
Well, no, that's hardly. I just know that I like the pycnogenol, and I've researched that a little bit. Midnight
you just
in
like
the
to say
chat
that word.
Arlena is so what? Pycnogenol?
I think you just like to say that word. I can't even pronounce it. I'll just have another sip of wine. Actually,
I can't spell it. I know that. Well, anyway, Midnight in the chat room says, Arlena is so informative.
Oh, yeah, so, I am. Just so informative. I better pour some more wine here. Can you hear it?
I hear it.
I poured some more wine.
You are so funny. You truly are one of the cutting edge rebels of our
society. I am. I'm just
here.
Cutting edge. I am. You know, and anyway. Anybody else have any questions about grapes? My goal is to get in some grapes so that next year on the show we can talk about all the different wines that I'm making. No, it'll be a little while yet. Actually, my father-in-law makes this wine. Oh my gosh, it's more like port. It's like you just
take
a little taste and you fall on the floor. It's just amazing. He does a strawberry wine, he does a cranberry wine, he does a watermelon wine. But they're so strong. It's just amazing. He must, in my opinion, he doesn't have it down quite right because it's like bootleg stuff.
You must be. Bard Rock says you sound like Julia Child with the wine.
Like,
maybe a reincarnation of Julia Child.
Bonjour, papito.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
You know,
but certainly it's just about time to do our prize, our trivia question. And
awesome.
If you'd stay on the line with me, that'd be great since Whisper isn't here. And
yes.
If you could come up with a trivia question from today's show, we'll do that. How does that sound? Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
And
I will do the trivia question.
Okay,
awesome.
Great. Very good. And let me just get to my notes here. Oops, hold on just a second. There we go. And today our prize is a nesting box from Ware Manufacturing. It's a wooden nesting box from Ware Manufacturing. So hold on just a minute.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
All right. Welcome back to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's time for our trivia and the prize. And the rules with the trivia are what you just call in. The number is 347-637-3237, 347-637-3237. Be sure and push 1, so that'll put a little marker up so I know on the switchboard that you want to talk. And then if you know the answer to the trivia question, what you want to do is send an email to chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. Be sure to include the prize name in the subject line. In this case, this will be a nesting box from Ware Manufacturing. And then also include your name, shipping address, and phone number in the body of the email. So be sure to include that if you get the prize. Arlena, I'll pick the number
okay.
for the call-in. How's about that? And then we'll have your trivia question.
Wonderful.
So why don't we go with 8? I would say infinite 8. I always like to think about 8. So there you go, caller number 8, 347-637-3237. And the question is, Arlena?
If you have wine variety grapes growing, should I leave less buds after pruning or more buds after pruning?
Excellent question. That, you know, and I just happen to have my notes right here, so. Okay. And Christine, if you type that question into the chat room for us, but that's a really good question.
I'll take a sip on that one.
So no, that's not fair. So repeat the question again, Arlena.
Yeah. Oh, repeat it? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, repeat the question. If you have
wine variety grapes planted, do I leave more buds after pruning or less buds after pruning?
Okay. Or less buds after pruning. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
347-637-3237. Call in if you know the it is a slip, sip, sip, slurp. Oh, gosh. If you have a wine variety of grape planted, do you leave more of the buds? To get the grapes off or less of the buds after pruning is the question. 347-637-3237. Okay, we've got a great week coming up here. Tomorrow, of course, is Thursday, and we'll have Professor McCrae talking about planting and planning a pasture for your poultry. Of course, Friday, fun, frivolous, fractured, frolicking, and braided R for rooster. Fun Friday is only about the day after tomorrow, and then we will have gotten through the week together. Andy Schneider will probably be with us tomorrow. He's with Jen taking some courses. Jen is taking the courses, and then being a great dad that he is, Andy is Caleb sitting, so he's taking care of his young son. Okay. So, Arlena, any final thoughts here? We've got just about 2.5 minutes to go.
Oh, I'm just really happy to be involved in this show. It's been really quite fun. All along being on the Chicken Whisperer Monday, the first and third Wednesdays. And, you know, you say the first and third, and it seems like it's so long ago. It just comes by so fast. I look around and
it does.
Oh, my gosh, today's the day. What if I would miss it? That would just be terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because it does seem like time is accelerated to a point where it is easy to kind of miss things. I mean, the days just fly by. You know, like in the movies, they'll have the calendar pages just kind of flipping by. That's how this year has been. So I feel like I'm in Whitewater. Yeah.
I know that. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Okay. 347-637-3237. They've got the
calls coming
in here.
Nobody knows the question.
But you've got 90 seconds. If you planted a wine, actually, we don't have time to take it, and there's not quite enough callers. So what we'll do, Arlena, is keep this for tomorrow's show, and we'll bring it on. And we've got less than 90 seconds to go, so I'm just going to go ahead and take it out. Arlena, thank you so much for coming in. Our special guest today is Arlena Schott from Garden Wise Living, and that's gardenwiseliving.com. Appreciation
Wonderful.
To our chat. Yeah, you've been great. I mean, you're so much fun. Appreciation to our chat room chickeneers and all our listeners for tuning in. Where would we be without you? And, of course, blogtalkradio.com provides our radio, our chat, and our video services. Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is the creator of this show and, of course, the wind beneath our wings. Thank you, Andy, for bringing us all together. I'm Pat Foreman, and from all of us, absolutely all of us, may the flock be with you. Quote the raven, quote the chicken, quote the chicken, evermore. God bless everybody.
Ha ha ha.